analysis or GAAP approved managerial accounting, some really solid financial analysis. I had a slide up here that I took out last night when I got to the hotel because I had some prices and things. I actually had a graph in there, and it was 3 weeks old. It was already out of date. So Stan and I were having breakfast today. We can barely keep up with what's going on in this industry. Price of land, price of corn, price of when closing a plant in Kansas, whatever. I mean, this thing is changing so fast, so dramatically. You've really got to be in tune. You know, we subscribe, Dr. McQuiston and I subscribe to Feedstuffs and Cattle Facts, and we read it. Beef and Drovers, and I can barely keep up with this thing. And Kim says that, you know, there's so much stuff coming across her desk that she can't even read it all. And yet we have to try, because we don't want to get blindsided by not knowing where we are today. The last view of this thing is looking through the windshield about where you're going. That's why strategic planning is so important and why we are recommending it to you today. You have much more control over your future than any of us think we do, and I think and those costs really and profit really did show up in those two regions. And as Steve was saying, if you did it high profit, low profit, which I'll talk about in a minute, things really do emerge that you do control. Labor was one of them, and so find a system, build a system that doesn't require labor if labor's a problem. So look down the road, do a strategic plan, get some help. Purdue, Ron, has got the Bible. Where's Ron? Ron Lemonature of Purdue, you know, Google strategic planning in agriculture, and that's home plate. Tremendous resources out there at Iowa State, Nebraska, Texas A&M, and there are people to help. And hopefully our little workbook will get you started, and we've tried to synthesize it down, and I just think it's the thing to do next week. And so my analogy for looking down the road is to read something about corn usage estimates and look at how they're exploding, you know, adding, you know, going from 11 million, I think it's billion bushel, it's billion bushels, to 12 billion bushels in just 1 year. That's corn usage. That's inelastic demand that's going to impact your business dramatically. So look down the road, look at the world around you, and do some strategic planning. We think it takes all three. Dan, I'm not ready to rip the rearview mirror off yet, because I think you can. I think that leveling off of cattle prices that Stan showed just without the 2-7 data is really, really important. That's one of the things I would write down from this, from Stan's data. Calf prices certainly are leveling off. Basis are widening across America from everything I hear. Yeah. And so those trends still are important, but it's going to take looking at the dashboard like Stan does, and looking down that road with strategic planning that we're promoting. You know, really, successful ranch management is, I think, Stan, balancing out four boxes. One of, and you could hear it in Stan's discussion. It is about production in relationship to the investment that you've made to get it. It's about marketing the product, and it's about controlling costs. And they all interrelate. If you have lots of depreciation in your operation, so it's a reflection of pickups and right. Once you get it depreciated, what's it going to do in that little? So I wish we had a pointer. It doesn't work anymore. So investment is where that depreciation figure is costing you. Once you get done with the depreciation, what's going to happen to that piece of equipment? I'm going to tell you what happened to it on our ranch. You're going to increase repairs and maintenance. This is all about the relationships. The decision to buy that pickup because you can 179 it this year, sure, it could reduce short-term taxes, which might be a great strategy for you. And I can tell you what it's going to do to expenses down the road, Pete. It's going to increase your expenses as it gets depreciated. It's rust, rot, and repair. And so finding a balance between a production system, the investment that it takes to get it, the marketing and controlling costs is what I'd like to talk about. And when in the database that I worked about with the four things, so it was, this is the four the four key things that Steve was getting at. What's the specific relationships between the in the 180 some herds that we worked with, high profit to low profit? This is the summary. High profit people had lower levels of investment. High profit people had average production. They did not have huge levels of production. They didn't have 98% preg rates. They didn't have necessarily, they didn't have, you know, 700-pound weaning weights. They had excellent marketing skills. And they controlled costs. Well, you know, I presented this a lot of ways, Steve, and a lot of, but it really boils down to this. And somebody says, well, yeah, duh, if you do those things, you'll make some money. And duh, yeah, if it was that easy, we'd all be high-profit producers. It's not easy reaching the relationship or balancing those relationships out. Now, I've really, you know, one time I was giving a talk, and I asked everybody to turn their cell phone off, and just about now in the talk, mine went off, so... It certainly, mine's in my pocket and it's off. But Stan talked a lot about per cow numbers, and they're a very, very powerful way to communicate. But Stan and I would both agree that as you look at that dashboard, that you take another step and look at a unit cost of production. That's what Harlan Hughes has been begging us to do for his whole career. Look at that cost per pound of weaned calf. If you're in a yearling operation, look at it from a yearling operation. Look at it at the point of sale, right?
Absolutely.
Because that empowers your marketing. So per cow costs are easy to talk about, and I'm going to talk about them, but I'd really encourage you to think about your break-evens not in terms of per cow, but in terms of per pound of weaned calf. You know, Dave Delaney, manager of King Ranch, says, man, I can cut cow costs to $300. Give me a chance. I won't sell very many calves, but I can get my cow costs down. And so there's a real danger in just talking about cow costs. And I've got a little bit of algebra that I'm going to go with you that we'll work in a minute. So the folks that I worked with, and Eddie Hamilton and Dwayne Griffith up at Montana State worked, that were all kind of teammates in this deal, those folks that had really highly profitable ranches had a tendency to rent more of their assets than low-profit people, Steve. It isn't that they didn't have a home base of operation, they didn't own land, but they rented others' land. And given land prices the way they are now, there's really opportunity, I think, to rent it much more affordable than if you're going to expand and grow than it is to buy it. Use production systems that do not require expensive investments in depreciable assets. They'll eat you alive, if not on that depreciation schedule, which a lot of us ignore, Stan, because it's a non-cash expense.
Absolutely.
So we live off of depreciation.
Yes.
And then a few years down the road, rust, rot, and repair. Keep the portion of your production system dedicated to replacements as low as possible. Now, Burke and I have arm wrestled over this one, Burke Teichert and I. Okay, there are tremendous managers who can find niches in the marketplace that can market females great. But if you think about a fixed resource base and a 20% replacement rate, right, and that's about our database was 19.6.
Average is about 17 in the database.
So in the Southern Plains, about 17, 18% replacement rate. In the Northern Plains, it was almost 20%. So if you've got a fixed resource base and 20% of those of that forage, of that manpower, 20% of that operation is going towards the development of replacement heifers, and I'm not going to stop and do the math with you, but I'd encourage you to do it, versus an operation that has a 10% replacement rate, which I know, and once we get the open mic, someone's going to tell me it's impossible. 10% replacement rate is very, very low and very hard to achieve. But which one is going to produce more pounds of calf with the same cost structure, with the same fixed costs for sure? Well, that's pretty easy. This idea that you need to turn your cow herd over only makes sense if you're a purebred producer who's using genetic selection as a tool. If not, especially once you consider depreciation as a cost of raised females, you'll see how important longevity is into an operation. And it's about resource allocation. Find a production system with low levels of investment. Here are some standard ideas. Reduce the reliance on raised feed. So calve to grass, extend grazing, crop residues, and I know that I know every one of those is controversial, and we could arm wrestle all day, especially crop residues. And crop residue, the price of crop residues, Dave Hamilton, is really high right now, I think, going higher. So some of these strategies may or may not work in your region. Straw is worth a tremendous amount of money right now. If you get cellulosic ethanol, I can tell you what's going to happen to those prices. But anyway, in general, that's a great strategy. But I think you have to price it per unit of energy or per unit of protein. You have to be very, very careful. I was working with a guy in Iowa whose corn silage was by far the cheapest source of energy in his system, much cheaper than hay. It was cheaper than crop residues. So be careful about mental models that crop residues are cheap and corn silage is expensive, because it may not be. This is a brand new world on pricing. So this is my little algebra. Now, Stan, is a much, much better economist than financial advisor than I am, and he saw my little algebra and he snorted and said, "But whoa, I know. It's not, this is really simple." But if you think about a break even, the unit cost of production, a dollar break even, and you're trying to lower it, if you're trying to calculate it, it's just total cost divided by total pounds. I know it's too simplistic, but if you just go with me with a minute. So if you're trying to lower your break even and be more competitive in the marketplace, one of the big criticisms of me and Stan and Harlan Hughes and Eddie and Jim McGran is that all you talk about is cutting costs. Well, this is where it's dangerous just to talk about cutting cow costs. We're talking about cutting unit costs of production. And you can do that several ways. I got three ways. You can lower your break even if you can lower the numerator, lower costs without lowering pounds. Right, Steve? Simple algebra. And especially if those costs are fixed costs. You can lower your break even if you increase the denominator and hold the numerator as equal. So you can increase pounds without increasing costs. And you can lower your break even. And the third way would be to increase a cost which increases the pounds even more. You can lower your break even by spending more money, by raising costs, if the result is more pounds. And on the bottom one, the cost that you want to work with is not a fixed cost, or it's a variable cost. I think Stan referred to it as direct. Fixed costs hang in there whatever level of production you have. Variable costs change with varying levels of production. So on the first bullet, the one you want to attack if you're lowering costs is fixed costs. And the one, and this is my little view of the world, Burke, but if you're going to take the strategy of increasing some costs, which will increase total pounds, like an implants program or something, then you want to think about variable costs. Don't think about just, my cow costs are $600, I've got to cut them, so I'm going to make them $500. Think about them as in terms of a break even. Now, the group that I worked with in the Dakotas, Nebraska, Eastern Montana, and Wyoming, they did not have superior levels of pregnancy. They did not have superior levels, or their herds didn't have superior levels of weaning weights. And I put this up here, and maybe
it's working.
It'll work for a minute. The thing that worries me is ranchers that tip over the point of diminishing returns or have a production system that pushes them over the point of diminishing returns. And there are a lot of them. You have to be very careful about changing things that will put you over the point where increased inputs don't give you increased outputs. Pregnancy rate is the one that I like to talk about the most. I mean, you can find a system, you can get 100% of your cows bred some way, you can feed them, you can synchronize them, you can do all kinds of things, get them all bred, but at a cost and at an out, and that's just ridiculous. And we all know that, but what we don't probably know is where that point of diminishing returns is. And so when Stan or me or anybody says, well, try to ratchet up your preg rate, you have to be careful that it's not beyond some point of diminishing returns. The other strategy that these folks that I worked with had was excellent marketing, and they, Steve and our group, they their calf revenue and their non-calf revenue was much higher than low-profit people. And so they did that. If you think about it now, looking down that road, that risk management really comes into play. So does networking with alliances or seed stock producer buybacks or feedlot partnerships or just, you know, working the sale barn and letting everybody know the quality of calves because reputation counts. And I think what was surprising about Stan's data to me was that what a commodity business this remains to be. And it also becomes a leverage point for you to move out of. I don't think staying in a commodity business with declining prices and increasing costs is a strategy for success. You're going to have to take a very proactive approach to marketing. And I think lots of ways to minimize risk and hopefully increase or stabilize income. Now, so those are some big picture strategies that we found difference between high profit and low profit. So let's talk about some specific tactics. Well, I've got to be careful not to get too excited and plan crossbreeding, whether it's me or Jim Dosey or whoever, plan crossbreeding systems are probably the easiest, fastest way to attack almost every one of those things that I suggested. And you can still have cattle that fit a specific marketing program that hit a certain carcass. You don't have to give up some things to put in place a planned crossbreeding system. And the power of crossbreeding really is on the maternal side. Those cows are more fertile. The calves have more vigor. The colostrum's better. All of it adds up to more pounds, 20 to 25% improvement in total production, basically with the same resources. Personally, I think this industry's given it away at a tremendous cost to the cow-calf side of this business. You can achieve planned crossbreeds, you can achieve heterosis or some optimum level of it with multiple ways, and synthetic breeds, composite breeds, half-blood bulls, you know, lots of ways to get heterosis, and it's quick. It's within a year. So if you made that decision to adopt a planned crossbreeding system now, you would still only gain the results of it, start getting the results of it in 2009. But it also increases longevity. Longevity is one of the traits where heterosis really does shine. And I've worked with a specific ranch where the production system that had the lowest replacement rate was by far the most profitable. And so crossbred cows are more fertile. They'll stay in the herd longer. They'll live longer. They'll hold their teeth better. And I know why we gave it up as an industry, and I'm fighting to get it back. It should result in a lower break-even. Now, you can get cows too big and you can get birth weights too big. There's some problems that you have to watch, but We don't have to give it away. There's a couple things on matching stocking rate with carrying capacity and using flexible stocking rates for drought risk management. And I know in that Region 5 that Stan works in has had been just, you know, slapped upside the head one way and then the other in the last few years.
Absolutely.
Fires.
Fires, drought, too
and then,
wet.
And then too wet.
And now we're back in fires and drought again. Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah.
The question was, did my numbers include any of the drought subsidy, the livestock compensation package? And yes, they do. As we all know, they never amount to a whole lot. But yes, that's directly attributable to the cow-calf operation. So yes, they do. Yeah, maybe even uglier. That's right, if you didn't.
That proactive herd health management, Stan and I were commiserating about building this talk, you know, the saddest story I've, go broke story I've heard of, it was a neighbor who suffered from, whose herd suffered from BVD. Stan has one very similar. You know, the guy was convinced that, you know, he didn't need to vaccinate for BVD. The vet was trying to rob him of 10 cents a head or whatever it cost, and he lost. It was a horrible bet. The match cow to the type of environment, I know that gets thrown out, and we've got to talk about this just a little bit. This really shouldn't be misunderstood as small cows are the most efficient cows. The best work on cow efficiency ever done by the best scientists you'll ever meet, Dr. Cal Farrell and Dr.